Hey guys, welcome to the Fish Hunt Nation podcast. So glad you could join us for today's program. We have some great guests lined up for today's content. So without further delay, let's get right to this. Here we go. Hey everybody, good morning, Dwayne England, and welcome to the Fish Hunt Nation podcast. Randy Newberg.
Dwayne, thanks for having me back.
Great to see you again. You're so busy, but yet you take time to come sit with me, and I always appreciate it.
Well, you're the guy who is dialed into what's going on up here in the Northwest, so you're a valuable resource.
We try to be. And we're going to get into that. There's a lot going on.
A lot.
I don't know if that's a good thing. You want to be ground zero if it's like really exciting event, big release of something new.
Yeah.
We don't particularly like to be ground zero for what we're
known for. I wish it was different for you guys.
Yeah. So do we.
But I guess it explains why where I live in Montana, we're seeing more and more Washington and Oregon people moving there.
Yeah.
At least outdoor people.
At a minimum, trying to hunt there.
Yeah.
If they can get tags, right? I want to get into a lot of that with you, but first I want to catch up with you. Like this last year, 2024.
Yeah.
How many hunts did you get out on, and successful or frustrating? Just kind of give us a recap.
Yeah. A lot of hunts.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A lot of places. And you know, with hunting, some years everything goes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2024 was one of those years that wherever we showed up, the animals are like, "Oh, I want to be on video."
Oh.
We've never had a year
is
like
that
2024.
Right?
But I've warned my crew. 2025, we're probably not even going
to really
see
pay
a duck.
The dues, right? Not even see a duck or a beaver, muskrat, nothing.
Because that's how hunting is, right?
Yeah.
So it does this. Sometimes you look like a genius, and then sometimes you're an idiot.
Absolutely. So you had a pretty successful season.
I'm just looking back on it thinking, I don't know what we did to deserve it, but I'll take it.
Sometimes you just get handed that, right? Yeah. The good Lord looks over you and says, you know, Randy, you've been working pretty hard for a number of years. We're just going to let you have it a little success this year. For those that may be lagging or not new to the party, let's catch us up on Fresh Tracks.
Yeah.
Where do they find you? What's it all about?
Yeah, most people find us on our YouTube channel, Fresh Tracks. A lot of people follow our podcast. I do the Hunt Talk Radio podcast as I'm the sole host. And then I have a co-host for the Elk Talk podcast, Corey Jacobson.
Yep.
That's where most people find us. We have a large forum about hunting and conservation, public lands, called hunttalk.com.
Yep.
And then the normal social media stuff. But I don't know how to do that. So I got young people who do that.
You're lucky. I get stuck doing all
that. Really? You know how to do Instagram?
Oh, yeah. The Instagram, the all the Facebook postings, and
really
all the editing of our content we're putting on the TV show. That's all me. I mean,
really, I don't know how to do Instagram. They
I wish
me
I
enough
didn't.
About what the little symbol is on my phone, and that there's some red things show up in the upper right. If I hit those, it takes me to another page that sometimes I figure out, and then sometimes they'll call me like, "Hey, boss, don't be messing with Instagram.
Don't
screw that up."
And now we got to put it back on there. You actually deleted something we had going, right? So,
that's where people can find us.
So as far as your hunting, look, you're well known. You've made a name for yourself, public land hunting, right?
Yeah.
And you've shown people and taught people over the years how to be successful in public lands. And we all know it's getting harder and harder.
Yep.
Populations are booming. I think here in Washington, we're up to almost 8 million people now.
8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And, you know, there's more card-carrying members in both fishing and hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. A lot of folks are leaving Washington to hunt the likes of Montana, Idaho. And it's getting very competitive even to draw tags in certain areas, right? You got to get online. You got to sit there and wait in your window. And it can be frustrating for many. But when you get out on your hunts and you're filming, oftentimes you're hunting by yourself. But to capture this, I mean, you have a small crew, you know, but you're not just portraying like, "Hey, I'm the solo hunter." You truly are like solo hunter doing your thing, but you also have to capture that. So talk a little bit about coordinating that and what the goal is, what the end result is. What are you looking for?
Well, you know how that goes when you're walking around with a camera guy or two.
Yep.
You know, that adds a little bit of complexity. But for us, we're there to tell stories. We want to tell stories about the landscape, the species, the people.
Yep.
Maybe something that's of interest to, a current topic that's out there related to that, like We just got done with a big episode in Nevada, which we talked about feral horses. We talked about cheatgrass. We talked about fire cycles.
Yep.
So we put together these production books, and we want to talk about things that we hope people are interested in. And
for sure.
And it's a way to connect them to these topics that are really relevant
in that region or in that, you know, geographical location that you're currently hunting in. It totally makes sense, because you're not just out there creating and capturing a hunt, but you're also on the educational journey.
Yep.
Some of the history behind it, right? Why you choose to hunt here or there.
Yep.
In your mind, what's and you and I kind of talked about this yesterday, and I wanted to go down this road a little bit. You know, in Randy Newberg's mind, what's a successful hunt? Is it the outcome?
Yeah.
Is it you got to work hard to earn it?
Yeah. It's funny. If you would have asked me that 30 years ago, it would have been fill the tag. And if you'd asked me 20 years ago, it would have been fill the tag with a big one.
Sure.
And now it's, I went and explored a place that's always been on my mind. Mm-hmm. I learned something by researching and getting ready for the hunt. I spent it with people who are important to me. And that's all it takes for a successful hunt.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, if we fill a tag and fill a tag with a bonus, then it's
right?
even
absolutely
much better,
because you earn it.
But I think as I've gotten older, I've realized the value of spending time with my family, my friends, and people who are important to me.
Yep.
And I think that's something that everyone in the audience can relate to.
Sure.
You know, I was talking to some guys, they showed me this, I think he's 12 years old. They've been hunting this same spot in Washington for four generations.
Wow.
And the grandfather was there, and you could tell he's almost teary-eyed.
Absolutely.
Explaining to me how much this place meant to him. It's public land. And then his grandson goes there his first hunting season and shot this whopper mule deer.
How about that?
And I wish I could put that in a bottle.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what hunting means once you start getting older, getting some gray hair.
Well, you kind of slow down, take it all in, and, you know, and I think you and I had a real brief but yet successful conversation the other day just on kind of putting a pin in it. Was it successful or not? And it's an individual, I don't want to say choice, but accomplishment, opinion of each and, you know, every person. So what makes your hunt successful? For some guys and gals, it's showing up at elk camp. Maybe you bag an animal, maybe you don't, but you got that week again with friends or family, and you do it year after year, and hey, we had a success. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah. I guess that's another one of those easy checkbox.
Right.
Nobody got hurt.
Nobody got hurt. Nobody went to the hospital. Nobody showed up at the front concierge with a bloody arm going, I think I need some help, right?
Yeah.
So there is that. I want to talk to you about the Casey Brooks story.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got a potential, highly probable world record elk taken here just outside of Cleveland. Yeah, in Washington, right? And there's been some controversy. Now, look, successful hunt, getting berated via social media. Mm-hmm. As we know, your and my generation, growing up hunting, fishing, what we had to do to be successful.
Yeah.
The information highway nowadays and how fast information moves from one source to another, lightning speed.
Yeah.
So folks will be all in support of his accomplishment. Then you got the entire camp of naysayers and saying, you know, did he earn it? Was it hard? Did he put in the work? Yeah. You know, if that's your thing, that's your thing.
Yeah.
Look, this is a 480 plus green score.
Yeah.
And he had access to it. Mm-hmm. Again, it'll be looked upon successful or token, or I call it a non-typical hunt.
Yeah.
Non-typical hunt can mean a number of things. For me, one thing is non-typical hunt is because it's either on a golf course or a backyard or, you know, in a parking lot. But what? How do you take that all in when you look at different groups of folks firing away, throwing their opinion out there, trying to either, maybe they're jealous?
Yeah. You know? I'm not sure what drives some people to feel that they're an expert on what happened.
That's
if they
good
weren't
point.
There.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm more sympathetic to that because people question my motivations and what happened. You know, when you put yourself out there, you have to accept that there's going to be the critics. And there are going to be the people who seem like they were right there with you, Dwayne. I know what really happened that wasn't on camera.
Yeah.
So I get subjected to this, you know, armchair quarterback.
Don't we all?
Yeah. You know, applying motivations to why I do what I do or how I did what I did. And so having been in that situation the last 18 years,
yeah,
I'm really slow to judge anything. I mean, there's some things blatantly, if someone ends up, you know, I read about them in the police blotter.
That's blatant, right?
Yeah,
that's
okay. I'm pretty sure something happened there. But all the other stuff about it, so many people have asked me about that. They're like, what do you know about the Brooks Bowl? Yeah. Like, I don't know anything about it. I don't live in Washington. I don't know the Hunter.
That's what I've seen on, you know, online, social media. Yeah. This guy says this. This guy says this. I'm like you. I don't get deep in the weeds on it. I read a few articles. I look at opinions of other well-known hunters and or what they say. And most of them kind of just free-formed opinion. Just kind of, hey, just roll with it.
Right.
I'm not going to weigh in negatively, positively, you know, either or.
Right.
I think you had a good point the other day. Like, if with the competitive nature of hunting on public ground nowadays,
right,
if you have the opportunity to get into a place on private land and you don't take advantage of it
because
you think you're less than a hunter or accomplishment.
Yeah. All right.
What's the end game? You want meat in the freezer? You want a decent antler rack sitting on your wall, maybe?
Yeah.
I'm a meat guy.
Yeah.
I want to put meat in my freezer, feed my family.
Yeah. For me, you know, there's sideboards. Is it legal? You know, those are the widest sideboards.
Absolutely.
And then as the sideboards come in a little tighter, is it something that is detrimental to hunting? Because there's some things you'll see on content where it's like, okay, that was legal, but you really didn't have to show the world that. You know, maybe a bad outcome or something.
Sure, yeah.
Other than that, I think the hunting community gets in this mindset of overusing the term ethical as a way to substantiate their own personal preferences and try to cast shade on someone else's preferences.
Yeah.
And I just like, I'm not going there, man. You know what? Whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, that's the beauty of hunting is you get to select how you want to hunt, what you want out of that hunt. And, you know, if you want to criticize, you know, statewide raffle tags or statewide auction tags, okay, that's fine.
Sure.
But right now they exist, and so the people who win a raffle or an auction, you know, they're taking advantage of something that's there.
Yep.
And so I look at what we have as bigger issues in the hunting space, and these kind of discussions and debates and, you know, rolling grenades into the other guys.
They don't help solve any issues.
Yeah, that right? doesn't even make my top 500
list. No, it's not even usually in the conversation. Yeah, right? So I
don't know. I get it that some people want to get worked up about that, but I wish they'd take some of that energy and use it for advocating for more access, emailing one of their state legislators or trying to have a conversation in person with a decision maker or an elected leader.
Yep.
That would go so much further towards the cause of conserving and protecting hunting and fishing and access, but that's just the human condition, I guess.
Well, yeah. Persons choose to, put their focus and their energies into certain things, and I'm with you. I want to see more advocacy. I want to see more efforts in contacting local legislation and working with your fish and game departments and trying to ensure that we continue to have access, that our game is managed appropriately so we have opportunity.
Yep.
And you and I both know, not just here in Washington, but across the western states especially, we're up against it, right? Real quickly, because recently, just last week, I watched Marcus Hockett on his snowy hunt in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And again, I'll go back to, well, what's it take? You know, how much effort is enough effort? Like, this is a feed site. Wyoming's well known. I think Marcus stated in his documentary of that entire process, there's 21 feed sites now.
Right.
Been happening since the early 1900s, right? So the elk herds can survive through some of those harsh winters. Well, I found it somewhat humorous, but also educational, If you haven't watched this, go to Fresh Tracks and see it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Easy to get to. It's only about a half an hour program,
right,
too. It gets right to it. But good elk versus bad elk.
Yeah.
And you're helping manage wayward elk that are doing, you know, harm to ranchers' haystacks,
yeah,
right? So
right,
nothing wrong with that. It's a tag you can put in for.
Yep.
I think he even stated, Randy told me to put in for this tag if I wanted to. It's like, yep, go for it.
Right.
Then he landed it, but he makes a good point. He didn't really know what he was in for.
Yeah.
And he didn't just simply drive out there and shoot an elk. He had to go back a couple times.
Five times. Yeah.
Over the course of like, what?
Two months.
2 months.
Yeah.
So that's just not a give me.
No.
You draw that tag, it's not just a give me.
Yeah.
But, and then the pack out, he had some work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You probably saw the comments, though, in YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, this is a season that Wyoming Game and Fish put in to address the fact that there are bull elk that just don't go to the feed grounds. They use these feed grounds to try to keep the elk off private,
yes,
haystacks.
Yeah.
Well, there's bulls that just say, no, I'll make a living somewhere else.
I'll hang over here.
Yeah. And so it's a hunt to address that.
Absolutely.
And so that is what it is.
Well, it's a management decision.
Right.
And they're working with the ranchers.
Right.
It's much like being involved with listening to ranchers' needs in the realm of how we're managing predation on my cattle via wolves,
right,
and bears and things, right?
Yeah.
It's, there has to be that connection and the opportunity to work together. And if a game department deems that, well, we could just simply go out there and spend money and remove these elk, or we can give the hunting community an opportunity.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to take?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody wins in that regard.
Yeah.
Also thought his point in showing the process for testing for CWD is on point.
Right.
Because we know in certain areas now, here even in Washington, we have our first influx of CWD along the border of Idaho.
Yeah.
And we have three GMUs that are noted to have shown very small sampling, but it's here.
Yep.
And you don't eradicate it. Once it's here, it's here.
Yep.
You've been following it very closely. I've been following some of your efforts to keep track of it and educate people.
Yeah.
But the no baiting rule that's been instituted for a number of these places is on point as well. Mm-hmm. And then you look at these elk feeding sites and you go, gosh, isn't there concern?
That's, and Marcus brought that up, and it was interesting to see how the comments instantly are like, don't tell me what I can and can't do. I want to bait. And then the others are like, well, anything that even brings animals close nearby is wrong. And so you had instantly the two polarity of
every
the
time.
Opinions. And
every time.
So part of what we use our content for is to try and bring the issue to the surface.
Yep.
Throw some examples, in this case, an actual hunt.
Sure.
That brings this topic right there in front of us. And let people talk about it and discuss it. And that was one of them.
Last year we spent some time talking about, I'm shifting gears here a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to get into kind of where we were going at the start of this whole thing here. And last year we spent some time talking about this, and for good reason. So you're very aware, and I appreciate it, the effort you put into traveling from state to state and seeing what's going on in not just our fish and game management, but the dismantling or the overtake in some of our fish and wildlife commissions.
Yep.
How they're being basically hijacked.
Yep.
Persons being appointed into these positions by governors or groups and organizations funding this pattern of behavior. In other words, our Fish and Wildlife Commissions in a number of states have been hijacked by bona fide anti-hunting,
absolutely,
anti-fishing, anti-consumptive is really what they stand
right.
for,
yeah.
right? So if I was going to put it in one category, I look at it as anti-consumptive.
Yeah.
And they want to preserve.
Yeah.
They're managing game by preservation, not conservation, right?
Yeah.
Washington is a hotbed. We'll just say ground zero. Remind us again some of the other states that are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, what we see happen in Washington, the next state it pops up in is Colorado.
Yep.
Like, both of you have an identical law in your legislatures right now crazy firearm restriction laws.
And getting worse.
About self-insurance and written bonded to own a firearm.
Right.
Those are identical in your legislature and Colorado legislature. Yep. So you kind of see it as like a dandelion. You know that once you get one here, it's going to pop up over there where the sun is
on your lawn. Yes.
And so we know it's going to pop up in Colorado. We know it's going to something similar is going to pop up in Oregon. It's probably going to have some traction in Arizona, maybe Nevada, maybe New Mexico.
Yeah.
So I want to know what's going on here because you guys are ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who thinks that what happens in Washington is in a vacuum, I got news for you.
Right.
It is not in a vacuum. No. It's like throwing a big rock into a little pool. There's ripple effects that are coming to your state because of what happens here. And
absolutely.
That's why I take such a keen interest in what's going on in all these states.
I'm looking for a bill, and I had it written down. We have a couple things going on. We've been under the governance or oversight of a Fish and Wildlife Commission since 1994.
Yep.
Now, the process, as you know, and for viewers and listeners that may not be aware, this is a process where current governor, and we have a 9-person commission.
Yep.
They appoint persons to those seats. It's a 6-year term. Those seats are then confirmed by a Senate confirmation committee. Yep. We've been under one-party rule here for close to 40 years.
Yep.
And you'll never see a Senate committee comprised of primarily same side of the aisle as your seated governor to go against any of those appointments.
Right.
And if you get a governor that's jaded in their decision making and focus, they're going to just do what they want to do. And nobody's challenging, historically, the last 12 years under Inslee, nobody was challenging his appointments.
Right.
The biggest thing is we have an RCW in place that states the governor shall take input from organized, recognized groups throughout the state of Washington.
Right.
We're talking the likes of, you know, on the fishing side, PSA, CCA, NSIA, a lot of organized groups. On the hunting realm, backcountry hunters and anglers, and a host of other conservation coalition. We have a litany of them. But the governor's position on that is to sit and take the input like, hey, we really put our trust and value in this individual. We'd like to see him or her as one of your nominees into a commission position.
Yep.
Our outgoing governor hadn't done that for years and just said, this person's up next.
Yeah.
What I found interesting is he would take input from in-state and out-of-state organized anti-consumptive groups to bring these persons' names to the top that he would then appoint.
Yeah.
Is that also happening in other states, or is that just here?
No, it's happening again in Colorado.
Go figure.
And I'll be honest with you, you know, your side of the aisle that controls everything in your state is one side. The state I live in, the other side of the aisle, controls everything.
Right.
And they're not anti-consumptive, but we still see some crazy things where it never used to be 20 years ago that fish and game commissions and stuff like that were considered part of the spoils of political victory.
Right.
They followed the process. You know, your state says, what if that, here's why we're establishing the Wyoming or the Washington Wildlife Commission.
Right.
And they're not following that.
Not at all.
Your state has adopted administrative ruling guidelines for how commissioners are selected, what their proportionality needs to be by geography and by interest.
Yep.
They're not following
that. Not at
all. And there are other states that have said, well, you know, hell with it. We're not going to do it either on both sides of the aisle. So,
in some regards, these organized groups are trying to challenge it, but it's very cloudy in the process.
Yeah, and that's...
And if it goes anywhere, it's going to be tied up in litigation for a number of years. So, and they know that workaround is a lengthy process, so they're just kind of doing what they know they can get away with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the spring bear and mountain lion debacle here in Washington State comes on the heels of those appointees doing the governor's bidding, understanding the laws and rules that we're currently engaged in. So when you have a group of like-minded folks who are anti-hunting, anti-consumption, And they look at something that's been in place for 40 plus years. Mm-hmm. As in our spring bear hunt, for example, right. Looking back last 3-4 years, they took that, as you know, Randy, and they said, we don't agree with the policy. Mm-hmm. And we think the policy is extremely gray.
Yeah.
And we want to fine tune this. Now, in their mind of rewriting it, there's more verbiage and language in there that becomes preservation.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Right. More than consumption. And they try to just put that in. They don't involve co-managers as in the tribes.
Right.
Which is a huge red flag.
Oh, yeah. For your state, you have a case that says you have to co-manage with
absolutely.
The tribes.
Absolutely. And when we have a Fish and Wildlife Commission that thinks they can just undermine that.
Right.
And just, we're just going to, you know, put this in place.
Right.
Thank God the tribes are powerful enough and the strength they have, even all the way back in D.C. with the BIA to go, time out.
Yeah.
That's not going anywhere.
Right.
Well, you almost think, okay, we got a bit of a win here, but we don't, because now they can go, well, until we get clarification on policy.
Right.
DFW, you're not going to be allowed to issue any hunting permits for spring bear.
Right.
And then they take that policy and they stick it on a shelf, and they know it can just sit there and collect dust until they want to address it.
Right.
And they win because they're keeping us from going after our spring bear hunt.
Right. Yeah. And that happens in other states where we have a trend in the last, I'd say, 10 to 12 years where elected officials somehow feel they don't have to follow their state constitution, their state
right.
laws, their right. whatever.
Right.
And if you look, I don't care if it's federal policy, state policy, local, county policy, the only recourse citizens have when elected officials refuse to follow the law
mm-hmm.
is litigation. The other side knows a couple
yep.
things, like
yep.
you just mentioned,
yep.
litigation lasts forever. So they at least have it their way until the litigation is solved. So
time consuming,
yep.
money absorbing,
all that.
Taxpayers' dollars wasted.
Right. They also know that we as hunters tend not to litigate.
No.
So their playbook, if we open their playbook,
oh, yeah.
it's let's take the control of the levers of political power, let's abuse it.
Yep.
And they're not gonna sue us.
And if they do, it's gonna take years.
Yeah. So knowing that's part of their playbook,
yeah.
as much as I hate to say this, and as much as I don't like this as the mechanism to fight back, it's going to be litigation. You guys here in Washington.
The only way to win.
It's the only way. Last year, the Sportsman's Alliance came here with some of your groups.
Right.
And they sued your commission because, or your state, because your governor appointed a commissioner to two state governing bodies,
mm-hmm.
and your statute says you can only serve on
that's
one.
Right.
They won.
They did.
Now they're having to sue your state again. And so it's expensive,
mm-hmm.
and I know hunters are like, why do we got to do this? We have to do it, unfortunately, because in a state like Washington, you're never going to raise hunting and fishing issues high enough to make that an issue that sways the voting outcome.
Correct.
Right?
No.
So here's our reality you're dealing with
yeah.
in Washington.
Yep.
What are the tools still available to us
mm-hmm.
to fight back?
Well, and your point is on point in that when you have a population of 3% that hunts,
right.
you can't take anything to the voters.
No.
First of all, you're going to be out campaigned by the anti-groups,
right.
Humane
yep.
Society and others,
yep.
sitting on millions of dollars that mm-hmm. can inundate the airways with biased commercials that falsely educate the soccer mom in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And when she goes to the voting, she's like, well, yeah, I don't want them killing this animal or doing that.
Right.
So we can't win in that way. So we need organized groups like Sportsman's Alliance to bring this to a head. And us as recreational hunters and fishers, we have to pay attention to this stuff because they need money.
They, yeah.
And so when we carry this conversation on our show, part of that educational process is great, but then you flip the switch to the take action.
Yes.
And hunters and fishers always ask me, what can we do, Dwayne, to take action? Well, you can help support by funding.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit in the courtroom, but you have to make it possible for these folks to sit in the courtroom on your behalf.
There you go.
And that's how this works, right?
Yeah.
So the fight continues. Our outgoing governor, with 150 hours left in office,
yeah.
willy-nilly threw it. And look, we were in an imbalance of our commission, 7-2. Antis to two stand-ups, Molly right. Linville and Jim Anderson, fighting hard for us to retain yep. our hunting and fishing. Molly Linville is a rancher from the east side, phenomenal lady, very smart, has done really well for us on our behalf.
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't fit the model and the mold.
Right.
We got to get rid of her.
Oh, yeah.
She's a cancer for the commission we're trying to build.
Yeah.
So out she goes, and he appoints Lynn O'Connor. Mm-hmm. Lynn O'Connor has a long history, involvement member, serving as president and vice president for the Kettle Range Conservation Group, who is historically tied in with Washington Wildlife First, who I know you know all
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
So this is our most recent appointee to the commission. Right. Now, that has to go through the Senate committee, be confirmed.
Right.
The only hope we're holding on to in Conservation Coalition and a few other groups here organized in Washington and backcountry hunters and anglers are all vying for time in Olympia right now to say, please do not confirm her. Let our new incoming Governor Bob Ferguson make those appointments.
Right.
And we don't know where this is going to go.
Right.
So that is for the powder keg right now. That's in one hand.
Right.
The other side of that is we have the Ruckels House report.
Right. That's a very interesting
report. What do you know about that?
Oh, I've read it. And it confirms what I see. I try to watch as many online commission meetings across the West as I can.
Which I tip my cap to you, my friend, because I can't do it. I mean, I do at times here in Washington. Mm-hmm. Because people are like, Dwayne, where do you find the time? Where do you? And I was like, it's not like we have the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're multitasking. It's yeah. running in the background. You're getting stuff done. Right. But,
and so the reason that's relevant is I've watched a lot of your commission.
I know
meetings,
you have.
And I watch a lot of others. I've served on committees. I understand Robert's Rules of Order. I understand agenda and process right. and protocol.
Yeah. yeah.
When I watch your commission meetings, the term that comes to mind is clown show.
Yeah.
And
they actually all arrive in a small car, you know, and they all pile out and go into the commission meeting.
They
right?
are the most poorly conducted mm-hmm. and administered meetings I have ever seen yeah. of a state
Baker doesn't
governing
know
body.
Anything about process and how yeah. to conduct a meeting.
Right. Someone will say, I don't know if we've given public notice on this. Oh, well, we're going to pass it anyhow. And so this Ruckelhaus report, yeah. when I read yeah. through it, it's like, that confirms everything I was thinking when I'm watching these.
That thing is so on par.
Yeah. So I guess the real question becomes, is your state legislature going to do anything with that?
So there potentially could be a positive outcome, mm-hmm. and then there's this real scary monster sitting over here. And if you read the three options that are, like, yeah. here's your three options.
Right.
If we polled 100 people that had minimal knowledge about the dysfunction and the hijacking of our current commission, I would venture to guess a high percentage would go, get rid of them. Let's yeah. get rid of the commission. Yeah. They're not doing any purpose. So if you read through that, and I know you understand this, that if you think by putting it under one director,
right.
appointed by the governor, that oversees a committee of folks,
yeah.
we're going down a path we'll never recover from.
Yeah.
Agreed?
I agree. The single commission, or the single director idea reportable to the governor, that's even more ripe for political
100%
influence.
So the alternative, the best case scenario, the best outcome for everybody involved is to, and this will take time, retain the commission as they are, not stoop to the lowest level of opportunity or option to say just leave them alone, they're doing fine, but to really revamp the commission,
yeah.
pull back some of the current folks that are seated there, put the due process in place, give it, you know, its opportunity to do what it's designed to do, as in let the organized groups that understand fishing and hunting and have a say in what we've seen in the past, successful and outcome and how to manage.
Yeah.
Let's bring these folks to the top and say, those are our people we want to see on the commission. And let's have a governor that listens to those groups
right.
and appoint them, and let's start utilizing the commission what it was intended to be used for.
Yeah.
Right?
Represent the people and their interests. as it relates to wildlife, give guidance and leadership to a department to right. manage according to the charter of what your department has. And if you read that, your charter for your agency in Washington
yeah.
is to provide opportunity, and it lists out what types of opportunity, and none of those voices are represented on this commission at this time. So that gets me back to, okay, you've got elected officials who say, ah, heck with that. We don't care if that's state law. We're not going to follow it.
Yeah. Yeah. The your question a minute ago is, well, we're in session right now. Senate's going to review the Ruckel House.
Right.
What are they going to do with it?
Right.
There's bills that have been introduced. There's a couple House bills that were introduced that got dumped the next day. There's one currently, and I forgot to write it down. Actually, I got it over there on paper anyway.
Yeah, it's like 5106 or something like that. Yeah.
But it walks exactly through what that looks like under structure for the appointed director in a committee oversight. And if that's the direction Senate or House is going to go, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
We're in trouble. And if they're going to lean into this and say, well, it's a budgetary, the reason behind it is budgetary, that's the false flag.
Right.
It's not budgetary. We are in a budget woe. They're also introducing bills once again to hike our
fees
for our licensing, which I'm going to have to unravel that as we get into the show in the next few weeks here. But there's a lot going on in Olympia right now. It's a scary time.
Yeah.
It seems to come up every year, but it seems to keep getting worse.
Yeah. And
right.
You know, I always like to say, where are some successes that give people hope?
Oh man.
And I looked to Colorado in November. They had a ballot initiative. When they first started the polling, me and a few other audistators, we were asked to sit in on some of this. And I listened and said, I'll do what I can. But as a Montanan, what can I do in Colorado?
Yeah.
But they were behind and they ended up winning. Well, how did they end up winning?
That's what you got to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they won. So what they did is they stayed on message. They used a 501c4 organization, not a 501c3 organization, because
right.
most of our nonprofit groups can't go to Olympia and lobby heavily or be involved in political issues because they'll lose their tax-exempt status.
Mm-hmm.
So Colorado said, we're going to have a 501c4 because the C4 can go do all that.
They can
that
take
stuff.
Action.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think there's some things to the roadmap of Colorado and its success that Washington could follow. The thing it's going to require in Washington is we need to get those national groups on our side.
Yep.
We need to get industry involved on our side, because if we can throw some wet blankets on the fires burning here.
Yeah.
Let's stop this before it starts spreading across the country.
Well, it's going to go one of two ways. Either we get those blankets on those fires and we help create that roadmap for other states to follow and find success, much like you're advocating for us to take a look at Colorado right now and get moving that direction to find success. Or the alternative, if they're successful, other states are going to look at that roadmap to say, how did they get the guns out of the hands of those folks?
Yeah.
How were they successful in closing off, you know, a couple hundred thousand acres to hunting?
Right.
That's the direction we don't want it to go.
Right. And that's why I'm raising the alarms to my audience, to anyone who will listen.
Yeah.
And why I come to this show every year.
And we appreciate
is
you.
I want the entire hunting and shooting community to understand what's going on here, because what happened here with the groups that are behind all this.
Yeah.
They now pop up in Arizona.
Oh,
they
for sure.
They pop up in New Mexico.
Colorado,
that's who's
New
helping
Mexico,
fund
California,
everything.
California, Northern California. Yeah.
Everything in Colorado that we're dealing with. It's the same groups.
But you know, for Washington, Colorado to be Siamese twins like this, it all started with the legalization of weed. And then, you know, the legislators took a hold of that, and that's how they've now formed their decision-making process, right?
Yeah.
So we got that going for us, I guess. Stepping back real quick, looking at the disaster that would become one director under the governor and then overseeing a committee, any other state trying to put that in place?
Not
or have
that
they?
I'm aware of.
So this
no other state. You guys would be, to my knowledge, the first ones to do it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to Nevada and some of their former people who serve careers in their agencies, and I'm like, how did you guys, because most people would say Nevada has the least amount of political interference of any state wildlife agency. Well, they have county level input, and then they have what's called, I'm going to say, like regional advisory groups. And then they have a commission. So by the time it gets to that commission, it's, everyone's had a say.
Gotcha.
It's been vetted.
Yep.
And for the most part, the Nevada legislature, I think they call it an assembly is what they call themselves.
Okay.
They kind of let that department run like departments are designed to run.
Supposed to do, yeah.
And
it sounds like then the commission's just dealing with the final part of the process. Like it's all been... No, no, yes, yes, no, this, and then they get, here's the bullet points, here's what we need to take action on.
Yeah, and another thing I see unique when I watch your commission meetings is maybe the person's off to the side, but just about every commission has their own legal counsel there.
Yeah.
Because I see your people argue about, well, what does the policy say?
Or they have no idea.
And they argue among themselves. They're not
because legal's not there, right? Yeah.
You need the attorney for the department or the commission to be there to say, this is what the law says.
Right.
And that's what the chairperson of the commission has to follow.
Yep.
But if they are there in your meetings, I they're off to the side in a dark room because I don't ever see
them. I don't know if they're there or not. That's a good question.
Every other state, if you watch their commission meeting, they have legal counsel there. In case any definitional or statute thing comes up.
Well, and they make it, they're like, you know, that's a good question. Legal, where are we at on this?
Yeah, exactly.
Very simple, right?
Right.
And then
you don't get...
And then they can move forward with the process, and they're like, oh, we're going to have to get back on this, or we're going to have to come back to this. Or,
well,
let's put it on the shelf next to the bear debacle and let it get dust,
right,
and let it sit there, right?
So, and attorneys will help your commission come to better decisions, keep them out of the weeds, keep them from violating open meeting laws, public notice laws, all that other stuff. And again, maybe that is happening in your commission, but if so, I don't ever see them, and I don't see them referred to or asked for advice. Where you go watch another commission, multiple times during every meeting, the legal department's going to get asked questions.
Or we have a commission that just doesn't care.
Well, that's, you know.
You know, they're like, we're not even going to deal with it. Yeah, we'll just do our own thing. So
I hate to hammer your people.
We need to be hammered on. Somebody's got to bring the spotlight onto this stuff. You know?
Right. And I think if there's some value I can provide, it's that I engage in this on a Western level.
This is why you and I sit down the last couple of years to talk about this.
Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's a little bit of osmosis back and forth. I get a ton from you, and hopefully I can give people the perspective of what you're seeing in Washington is not the norm.
No.
You guys are so far off the road.
I get it.
Path. You're through the ditch, across the field, and down in the creek on the other side.
And you know, it's as sad as it is, and you can see it at the voting ballots, you know, year in, year out, 2 years, 4 years, three counties. Three counties in Washington State.
Right.
And it is what it is. We can't we can't give up though. We gotta keep fighting the battle.
Yep.
So we're getting close here, but before we're done, last year you basically threw out to me when I asked you, have Rod Will Travel. You get any fishing in 24?
I did. My wife and I it was abusive to the walleyes last summer.
Perfect.
Yeah, she told me, she said, you have been traveling so much, we are going, she just booked all these calendar slots.
Like standing.
And in Montana, everybody knows we got, in the northeast part of the state, some really good walleye fishing.
Yeah.
And so it was really good.
What's the best months for you to fish? That's a loaded question, by the way.
Yeah, probably June. The walleyes are in that, they're between that post-spawn phase and that midsummer phase.
Sure.
And so they're a little shallower, they're hungry, you know, they're putting on the feed bag, they're predictable.
You want to catch some salmon in June?
I always want to catch salmon.
I got a brand new boat sitting back there.
Really?
Oh, when we get down here, we'll go take a look at it real quick.
Oh, man.
My goal is to get you back up here within your calendar year. A week or whatever, what fits.
Yeah.
And we will just go after whatever fish is available.
Yeah.
And it'd be great to have you on the show fishing with us. I mean, you do a tremendous amount of advocating and hunting and traveling all over, and it's like, I got to get a fishing rod in this man's hand. We need to go spend some time on the water.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It would. You know, my son lives in Beaverton, Oregon.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's always on me to come out here fishing. He finally got me out here waterfowl hunting last week.
Oh, that's right.
I hunted the last 3 days of Oregon's waterfowl season.
Fantastic.
I'd love to come and do it.
I'm gonna hammer on you until I get you up here.
You guys have such unbelievable fishing and diverse fishing here.
I'll try to do a show about it.
Yeah.
We roll through season and we cover so many fish. I'm going to be honest, we don't spend a lot of time on the ditch pickles, the largemouth or smallmouth bass, right? Walleye we love. They're not great fighters, but phenomenal table fare.
Yeah.
And then you name a fishery here in Washington State, albeit reservoir, rivers, drift boat, power boat, Puget Sound, ocean.
Yeah.
We're covering it on this show.
Yeah. I mean.
And it's very involved.
Yeah. You guys have a remarkable history for not just fishing, but hunting. And that's why it's so surprising to me.
It's very frustrating.
To see the craziness coming out of Washington, because most people who don't live here view Washington, or have until recently, as this place of fanatic hunters and anglers.
For sure.
And then we start seeing this crazy stuff. So it's a contradiction that.
Could you imagine if it was managed appropriately?
Oh.
Like the goal was to maximize opportunity.
Yeah.
Maximize every opportunity we could by sound management against predators. Our predation issues, avian, pinniped, on paw, you name it.
Right.
They're out of the game, man. I mean, the predators are ruling.
Yeah.
You are well aware of the decimation of the elk herds and the blues.
Yeah.
The sea lion impact to multiple salmonid returning runs on the Columbia River and throughout Puget Sound.
Yeah.
The avian predation is just out of control. They're doing little pockets here and there, but if we were really on top of our game, predator rule and decimation of fish, fowl, or whatever would be under control.
Yeah.
And things would be moving in the right direction. And this state could be something to behold in that people would be like, I'm going to Washington to do this.
Yeah.
And there's very little of that.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah.
We're hopeful there's still time in my lifetime, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens. If there's one good thing about hunters and anglers, they don't give up easy.
We can.
And if we do, that's when we've lost for good.
100%.
And as long as I've got air in this body, I'm here for the cause.
Fight the fight.
Yeah.
I got a seminar today here as we wrap up at the Washington Sportsman Show. You got a seminar today?
Yep, 11:30.
Okay. Quick rundown of what's going on a week and a half from now in Portland for you.
They got me doing most everything they have me do is about elk hunting.
Yeah, weird.
So I'll be doing 4 seminars there. A lot of Q&A stuff.
Good.
Yeah, and then I'm usually hanging out at the booths of one of my partners.
Yep.
And just mingling and talking to people is so useful to me. I get so much of a diversity of perspectives that I would not get if I just stayed in my home state
of
Montana.
Yep.
So
we appreciate you making the trek.
Thanks so much.
And I always appreciate you taking time to sit down with with our little show here in the Northwest and what we got going on. So
thanks for what you guys do. It's really important.
We're trying. So thanks for tuning in today at the Fish Hunt Nation podcast. Hey, I want to remind everyone, you can also follow us each and every week, Thursday evening, 6 p.m., when we stream live our weekly fishing and hunting talk show at Fish Hunt Northwest. Track us down at Fish Hunt NW. Go to our Facebook page, like and follow. Go to our YouTube channel, subscribe. And of course, you can find us on X and Instagram. Check out all the social media platforms. Tune in each and every Thursday, 6 p.m. to get the updated information at Fish Hunt Northwest, Fish Hunt NW. Or of course, you can tune in right here each and every week to the Fish Hunt Nation podcast. So hey, get out there, get something done. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.